We've been dealing with a lot of issues, mostly centered around issues of security and creating a conducive environment for schooling. Today we have got in our agenda the Department of Basic Education together with the SAPS to give us an update briefing on the issue around issues around safety in schools. Thereafter, we are going to receive a report from the Department of Education from the province of KwaZulu-Natal with regard to the oversight visit that we undertook early this year as a portfolio committee to check on the status of functionality of schools in the province, to also check on whether the department departmental reports, as they always, just to ascertain what we have received in the portfolio committee in the form of desktop reports and all that in the province. We were supposed to deal with the adoption of the BRRR today, so we, because of other mishaps, we want to be dealing with that aspect of the program. That part of the program will be dealt with next week, Tuesday, and we are sure that the members by the end of today would have received the BRRR report, if not already on your emails. I don't know if there are apologies, Mr. Brown.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. In respect of the members of the Portfolio Committee, we have quite a few apologies due to the funeral of one of the members of the DA. Her funeral is today, so members have been seconded to be there. Honourable Gina is still on leave. Honourable Mguni is at the funeral. Both Honourable Mashezi as well as Honourable Boshoff is at the funeral. Honourable Majeke, Honourable Ngwezi, and Honourable Mashabela have also put in apologies. We also have received apologies from the Office of the Minister of Basic Education for not being able to be with us this morning.
All the apologies have been noted. We'll now give to the DG if there are any other apologies from your side. I see Tate Mohlala.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. From the SAPS side, I have an apology for the Acting National Commissioner of Police. He's not available due to other office commitments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We also note that apology. This is part of our the fact that we are receiving a report from both police and the department is just to highlight the fact that as government we are not working as silos. We are working together to resolve common problems. Hence, we have invited the SAPS to join us on this matter. So we'll therefore proceed with the program and give to the DG to lead the delegation. Over to you, DG.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, thank you very much for affording us the opportunity to come and update the committee on what we are doing with respect to developments in schools regarding school safety. We have agreed, and I thought the secretary of the committee would have maybe also advised the chair that the intention is to get our colleagues from SAPS to start, and then basic education will come after. If that arrangement is fine, I would hand back to you with a view of getting colleagues from SAPS to start first.
Okay, no, it's welcome. Can proceed.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, the DG and colleagues. I'm Major General Mohlala. I'm leading the delegation from South African Police Service. I'm together with Major General Mamuteti, so she will be presenting on behalf of the South African Police Service. General Mamuteti.
Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, colleagues, good morning, and thanks very much for the opportunity. I'm going to proceed with the presentation as suggested by the DG and my general here. Basically, maybe we should go to the overview just to indicate what will be covered in the presentation. It will be the background, the objectives of the protocol, just to remind the House on the aims and also the objectives, and also to indicate the school linkages as it was also contained in the protocol, and the programs that we have conducted to date, and what were the challenges and the way forward thereof before we can conclude. So in terms of the background, the school safety programs is actually embodied around the protocol that was signed by the two ministers, which is the Minister of the Police and the one for the basic education, which was signed in 2011. And of course, the protocol as it is was acknowledged and is supported by the committed members for implementation at national and also at the provincial level. Therefore, both departments are supporting the protocol through the coordination of the school-based crime prevention programs. And in relation to that, there was a medium-term strategic framework. It's covered in the medium-term strategic framework of both the departments to ensure that we don't lose track of what is happening at the schools. The objectives, in a summary, is just to strengthen the safety schools committee that are supposed to be there, and then the effect that we want each one or each member or individual to take an active role in terms of ensuring that the schools are safe. Also, the linkages of the schools to the local police station, as it was indicated in the protocol, to raise awareness amongst children and young learners regarding the violence and also the other issues relating to the crimes, mobilize community to take ownership of the schools, also to encourage the establishment of reporting systems as a school so that we can be able to get information in relation to what is happening. Remember, it's going to be a challenge for the police to be in each and every class.
I'm sorry, General.
Could you please switch off the mic, General? Okay, sorry.
This document has problems. I think it cut all the information on our left. I don't know if we can be assisted by... Yeah.
Okay, thanks for alerting us to that, and then we'll try and find means and ways. And then in the meantime, we request members to also look up. I know that it might be an issue for others. Yeah. We'll try and check if it's possible to get. Don't you have an extra copy of yourself? It's only two people. Thank you. We are trying to organize the copy. Maybe in the meantime, what we can do, DG, let's get the... Because we need only 3 copies, right, for the 3 members. Yeah, 4 with the Honorable Nchaisa. Mr. Brown has a copy, soft copy with us. Yes, Cindy. Okay, DG, you know what, let's stop the presentation so that we don't have to stop. Honorable members, we apologize for that mishap. We thought that, you know, the backup system will support us. We'll then take the Department of Basic Education to make the presentation, and thereafter we'll continue with the one of SAPS. Just to check and be sure, members, do we have the DBE copy? Yes. Yeah. So we'll use that copy. Yeah, it's available. Honorable Kosa, you are fine. We'll then take Mr. Njobe.
Thank you very much. I'm happy that at least our copy is in order. Otherwise, we'd have failed in our core duty of making sure that we present documents that are fairly legible as education. Chairperson, we presenting a report on school safety as the colleagues from SAPS have already indicated. There is a working relationship between us and SAPS flowing from the protocol that has been signed between the two departments. But I must indicate, Chair, and I hope this will not be misunderstood as extricating ourselves to some of these social issues, that we observe as basic education that, as we all know, that our core business is teaching and learning. But I must indicate that the social issues are coming fast and thick, and to some extent undermining the core business of teaching and learning. At some point, we were asking ourselves as to whether in terms of prioritizing what needs to be done, are we still going to be able to successfully protect teaching and learning? Because some of these developments are beginning to impose in the sector to come up with measures which would require, you know, resources, financial, human, and so on, which essentially wouldn't be allocated for in basic education, because the allocation that we get in basic education is for teaching and learning. But of course, as I've said, these are social issues emanating from broader civil society, but in some instances they tend to undermine the core business of teaching and learning. They destabilize institutions, and to some extent it makes it difficult, you know, for a conducive environment of teaching and learning to take place. But Mr. Njobe will emphasize this point. The experts are saying you don't necessarily have an unprecedented increase in incidents related to school violence, but rather there's also an improvement in the coverage with the advent of technology and other things. That's what researchers and experts are saying. Up to even yesterday, that's what they are saying. But one incident for us in education is one too many. Because as you all know, it's extremely difficult to get young people focused into teaching and learning once they've been disrupted. But Mr. Njobe will share the report that we have put together to indicate what we have done as a department to respond to these developments and the progress that we have made to even preempt, you know, further occurrence and to deal with other challenges that are related to school safety. If you allow me, Chair, then I'll request Mr. Njobe, the line function manager, to take us through the report. Thank you very much.
Good morning and thanks, Honorable Chair and members and colleagues, the DG. The presentation is covering areas around the overview. We, Chairperson, would also be upfront and provide the data in terms of indicating that we are alert and aware of the scope of the problem we're dealing with, and the presentation will deal upfront with those kinds of empirical kind of projections, so that later in the presentation we then are responding to those indicators and the key findings. The substance of the presentation will deal with bullying and violence in schools and how the minister and the department rallied around through the summit, the protocol on corporal punishment, and deal with substance abuse, and then conclusion into the presentation. We are indicating that, as the DG has indicated, the school violence is a reflection of the society within which the schools are embedded. We cannot divorce schools as subsets of communities within which they are based. And secondly, we want to reflect to the committee and accept that there is also a correlation between school management and the levels of comfort in terms of safety, that poorly managed schools will subsequently experience higher levels of disturbances than well-managed schools. And then quickly, lastly, there, we want to ensure that we give detail account on the incidences of bullying and our response to that. The first what we want to reflect on is the surveys, and as I indicated, the data that will sort of map out the situation. One of the key partners we work with, Chairperson and Honorable Members, is the Center for Justice and Crime Prevention, which is our research organ that sort of always give us the map and the pointers. And two surveys are sort of reflected here, the 2008, the 2015, and DG, we are in discussions that because we have reached the five-year period after 2012, the DDG has agreed that we need to go back to the CJCP and see that we could also mop up the previous 5 years and present what the situation has become thus far. We are also indicating the impact of infrastructure, the partnerships are very central in our presentation because of the nature of the business that the DG was outlining, that basic education on its own will not have the necessary capacity. On the slides that we reflect on, for instance, we are checking the location of violence, and we are upfront in admitting that we do have school violence within the campus, in the classrooms, around the school perimeters, in the playing fields, in the corridors, the school toilets, up until we even reflect when we refer to the principal's office, the principal office reflecting the resource. Like, for instance, we will know that the principal's office is a reservoir where you'll have your most important equipment being stored around that office, and it is one of the focal points that people will always enervate when they get into the school campus, to the extent that we know that in other schools they've even gone to the extent of drilling through the wall to get to the school safe because of the laptops and the iPads that we sort of have made available. I'm showing the figure one slide, Chairperson, speaking to the studies of 2008 and 2012, and we are showing, if we could indicate the levels of violence excluding theft in 2008 and 2012 rising to 44, and look into the element of sexual assault, and in the next slide we will show the impact of gender in terms of sexual assault, that the girl child is more impacted than any other grouping. Both, they indicate that your female learners, broadly speaking, they are highly impacted. They fear even being associated with either en route to school or within the school campuses or school activities organized because of the environment within which we know the girl child is sort of experiencing the learning environment. They walk to school. They will be more in danger than the boy child. They are at the playing field. They are more exposed than the boy child. And within those secluded environments like toilets, again, they are the most that are targeted in terms of other social ills. We are upfront about that so that our strategies, when we programmatize our responses, they are also necessarily properly supported. We are showing the General Household Survey of 2015 on the incidences of corporal punishment by province from 2011 to 2015. If I could make an example, just check the Eastern Cape, second bar there, that in 2015 we see that the incidences have dropped to just above 18%, rising from close to 30%. If you check both 2011 and 2012, quite scary. The next province you might check is KZN, that is very close in terms of incidences of corporal punishment in the ensuing period, and lastly Limpopo. We will come back to some of these provinces and then want to make some kind of inferences. Figure two, we then narrowed down to the metropolis, and equal to the previous slide, see how Mangaung and Eteguini, that is Mangaung in Free State and Eteguini, the levels of corporal punishment that were sort of identified there by the study, close to the highest point being Eteguini there, and then Mangaung coming second at 11.8. These are direct incidences at a close level of the cities. This is a study from the teams. We are aware that we have these SADC kind of regional studies, the SADC studies and the teams. These studies also want to sort of reflect the kind of impact. You might also want to check how violence is impacting learning. we picked up one element there, bullying. Look into bullying, how it was recorded on a weekly basis and the frequency, how people speak about it in terms of people voicing, you know, which is what the DG referred to, that now these things are getting to be recognized and people talk about. And then in relation to the education setup, just check the Northern Cape, the household education above matric, and then related to the bullying on a weekly basis. And then you'll see the disproportionate kind of an arrangement there. And these are the interrogations we make analysis of in basic education, so that we can ensure that when we talk about learner attainment strategies, we are able to respond. So learners who do not experience bullying score close to 68 points higher in math than those who. And this we are following through as we are going with our learner attainment strategy that the DG is driving with the curriculum unit. And the learners who frequently speak the language of the test at home, and how in terms of how they then experience the environment, how often they are able to use language. If they understand English and mathematics is delivered in English, you relate the level of articulation with the level of competency, you find that they are nearly the same. And the learners whose households with post-grade 12, I mean either one of the cousins, the mother or the father, has something of above the education, see how they score. We are taking all this together, and we are giving this to the committee and say we are alert to all the social issues that impact on learner attainment. The extreme one speaks to the area where I am talking to on bullying, and the last two ones, they talk to the question of numeracy and the question of literacy in terms of language competencies. But look at the first one, the blue one, if it is blue or powder blue, the 68 points and the impact of bullying and what it does to the learner attainment. This slide shows we are taking just Limpopo there amongst all the nine, just to make a point. The impact of bullying and how learners that are sort of experiencing bullying, and those who are not, look at bar number one, almost never being bullied, and look at their levels and the percentage of their achievement. Because you check those that about months ago they experienced bullying, and those who experience bullying almost weekly, just see the last bar there, that's what it hits. The correlation between the level of bullying and the level of attainment of learning outcomes, it's a bit scary. And we are conscious that this ill has, as we said earlier with the girl child and the boys, even the fear of going to school, even before they make any kind of attempts. We have put those kinds of studies ahead and say to ourselves, how do we respond? The first thing that the government has done, just across the sector, is to ensure that as a sector, we've got this common understanding and we share these experiences, so that when we then provide the response, chairperson, it's not at a corner of either Gauteng or we're talking to a small district. In 2011, the colleague had already started. We then had the ministry signing the protocol, and the following assumptions were made, that violence is underpinned at the level of the individual, the level of the school, the level of the family and the community. We are taking the cross kind of an approach to say, we know that when we talk about this, the predisposition of a particular child who might have been raised in a particular environment can be a problem child. We are saying, we also understand that these children come from particular families, and through the nature of the family, you can have a different disposition against the community within which the school is based. The community is the broader coverage, and the school is just a subset. If the community is violent and experiences violence, either the community experiences drug and substance abuse, the school will not be immune from that. And so in B, we're saying our program speaks to that, and at C, this is the point we'll follow through, Chairperson and honorable members and colleagues, that parental and community involvement is central in our approach, and we'll demonstrate that. Our protocol with SAPS, every school, in the beginning of the year, we do what we call the readiness monitoring. One of the instruments we are testing there is that schools have undertaken school safety audits. They've got an instrument within our school safety framework document that assists the schools to do their own audit of what are the threats to the school. When they have taken that diagnostic tool and made an assessment of the school, out of the assessment, they write the school safety plan. Within that, one of the structures is they must have a school safety committee. Part of the element there is the participation of SAPS in our school safety committee. We do mobilize the communities to take ownership of the schools, and then we encourage the establishment of the reporting systems. We will talk to the reporting systems as we go down as the tools. And as we speak now, we have made sure that of the 25,000 or so, 24,600 schools, about 23,000 or so and above have been connected to a police station, meaning at least a principal of the school has direct link with the station commissioner, because we may not have one police station per school. There are lesser police stations than schools. So we could have one police station linking about 4 to 5 schools, but a principal individually, each one has a direct link to our station commissioner. In cases of stress, they have got that kind of comfort. What do we do with the protocol? We've got specialized interventions that are directed at the hotspot schools. Together with SAPS and the colleague will demonstrate that we have commonly identified areas that are hotspots where there are frequencies of reports that tell us that the following social problems are bedeviling the school and the schools are disturbed on a regular basis. We have unfortunately identified them as hotspots, and then we focus our energy around that. Secondly, we are saying we would like visible policing and patrols to be provided periodically, especially this is an area we are strengthening that during the morning times at the moment of moving towards the school, the midday, especially when there are other hype activities around the schools, either it's breaks or there are activities like your soccer and others, and during after school, we would like the patrols to be heightened. We also do evidence-based programming, as I indicated earlier. Hotspot schools would have reported if it is the question of drug and substance abuse, or it is the question of violence, whether learners are bringing dangerous weapons to schools, so that the response are evidence-based. We do have searches and seizures that we periodically will do in consultation with the school management. The police, Chairperson, we must indicate, cannot willy-nilly be seen to be entering the schools, and then we change our schools into some kind of police states. We want a situation where the SMT is alert. On the basis of that, through the school committees, then we link with the police that on a particular month or date, would like you to do a search and seizure that is unannounced, but that has got to be done within the parameters of the law. The colleague will report on the matters of closing the illegal shebeens that are 500 meters close to the schools, the Operation Valley Hodge. In the next slide, Chairperson, we are also showing, as I indicated, we've got a very strong instrument, the National School Safety Framework, and I must indicate the framework is not a new initiative. Rather, it is the integration of a number of strategies that have already been obtaining. But what we tried to do in the framework is to write it in the form of a manual. We had the Operation Shisega before this. We had through the UNICEF, the school safe programs, and that partnership with UNICEF still continues. We do the training together with UNICEF in the new National School Safety Framework. So we are not starting things from scratch. The main objectives of the framework are outlined, Chairperson. I would like to only go to point number three, where I referred to us heightening the reporting system. We are talking to schools. We are empowering the schools to ensure that they utilize the SASEMS, that is an instrument to report. It reports on curriculum in terms of the learner attainment of scores. It also allows there are parameters where they can write the incidences that occur in the school. The DG has expanded a special team that is going to change the SASEMS towards it being web-based so that we can have an open interaction. And point number five, Chairperson and Honorable Members, is also critical, that we empower schools on disaster management. We can point out the strides that our provinces that are prone to natural disasters like KZN, that we know that KZN has procured the boats. In the olden days, we have seen in news where principals would cross the rivers carrying the question papers on their heads and then have the military intervening to save exams. But we know that currently that the province has taken some strides to secure boats that could assist in times of stress. We realized previously in the Western Cape here, when there were alerts about the storms, that the department was proactive to announce the closure of schools so that the learners are not exposed to those natural disasters. Let's come to the key subject that is bedeviling our core business, bullying. We are aware that the rates of bullying remain very high, and we know that from our understanding is that there is better reporting that is now beginning to indicate through the availability of social media that the incidences are happening at a particular end. We emphasize, Chairperson, again, that we know the gender element that is associated with this kind of because of the social norms and the wider context and the structural factors. And those are issues that we are dealing with. The committee is aware that we have to deal with some of the historical issues, like the belief that when there is a wrong done, you've got to respond through violence by either corporal punishment or severe responses. We have released, Chairperson, an e-safety guidelines to provide schools with tools to begin to change their school policies and address the prevalence now of the tablets that are now learning tools. And that is done with regard to the guidelines that were provided by the Films and Publications Board as to the sharing of the social media information. We are making our way the schools that they need to put them in the policy that receiving a message, sharing the message, distributing it has criminality elements. And therefore, we are also in February, March of next year, Chairperson can report that we'll be launching nationally an anti-bullying campaign premised on the slogan Stop, Walk and Talk. We're working with another social partner, Mindset, creating the primary school TV-based programs that will sort of guide the learners at that level how to respond to bullying. And that slogan, Stop, Walk and Talk, illustrates the response as to what learners should do. You must be able to indicate if you see the bully and you know the intentions of the bully, you can give a sign immediately that you must stop this. I'm aware of that. Or you must learn to walk away from the situation and be able to report that. You must talk about it. And we want also to address the question of the bystanders. Those who are there, they see it happening, and they don't talk about it. So the campaign will be coming out early next year, and then it rolls through. The second key one that the department has given a direct response, we, in 2015, had a summit that the minister had to call because the levels of corporal punishment had assumed national proportions that were unacceptable, and then COSAS and other learner groupings came up with the slogan and the campaign of hit back, that if your teachers in that school still meet corporal punishment in a particular class, whether it is grade 8A or grade 9B, and must go into that class, and then in defense of your mate, you must hit back. It was very serious, and then the minister had a summit, and out of that summit, one of the decisions was to how best we respond, because it's outlawed, and then we came up with a protocol. A protocol is an instrument then that illustrates from the parent to the school, to the circuit, to the district, to the province, and nationally, how incidences of corporal punishment will have to be dealt with. But what is important, Chairperson, is to point members to a critical bullet in the next slide. If I could be quick to go to D. Within the protocol, we have built in positive behavior intervention programs. It's a system, and it is implemented in a number of districts. We are using Overbeck in Western Cape because they have long started with a program. It has gained good traction within the inclusive kind of unit there. We are using the overseas studies through a professor who was a PNO of this thing, Figaji, who has written a full text on this and a number of states that have put it to a good test. We are also having a very strong partnership that is we are finalizing with Save the Children, which is doing schools in Gauteng on positive behavior initiatives, because educators are frustrated as to how do they respond to elements of ill discipline in the absence of corporal punishment, and this will be rolled out and then doing the training and providing all the levels in terms of the response to corporal punishment. Towards the closure, Chairperson, one of our response to social ills deals with substance abuse, both drugs and alcohol. We are putting alcohol on top because of its ease of availability and how it has become cool when you check the adverts, how bottles of liquor have become mesmerizing and very much attractive. If you don't drink, you're not cool. You're not sort of clever enough. And we are sort of ensuring that schools are doing drug testing within the law, because there's a guide that shows that the school act indicates how do you go about doing a drug test within the law. The female educator can only test the female learners, and then the male educator can only test that to the boy learners in the presence of any of the guardians or the parents. And then what do you do with the test? Because we don't intend criminalizing the learners. The intention of the test is to ensure that the support processes then kick in. The steps are there. We are aware of that we do have the strategy on the prevention and management of bullying, and we do have UNICEF again that is giving us the support in terms of the implementation framework. Very strong relationship with social development for referral, and then the health department in terms of extreme cases of abuse and addiction, because at some stage it goes to that extent, and justice if the learners ultimately are in conflict with the law. In our conclusion, Chairperson and members, we are saying an effective and comprehensive education sector approach to school violence and bullying encompasses very, very key strategic intervention. One of those is leadership. If the school is well managed, if the principal is aware, he can, in any instance, with the support of the school governing body, have minimum strategies that should gear the school towards order. But where the school governance is weak, There's no way you can deal with those matters. Unfortunately, we've got two sectors of management. We've got those educators and principals that are already in the field, and those can be assisted through the presets now, the INSET programs, through advanced diploma in education that is strengthening management. We are working through a continuous teacher development program with universities in terms of the INSET, and through our own funding of Funza Lushaga, that the educators that are coming out of the universities, we must ensure that they are better equipped. We have to bring a matter within that bullet, Chairperson, around curriculum that we can speak to in terms of the members' engagement, that we are strengthening life orientation, and we can demonstrate that we are now building so that it is systemic rather than incident-based, and then deal with a new ethos of democracy, and then respect and discipline. Capacity towards the educators and the schools to build alternative forms of disciplines, we are doing that, as I've indicated, through PBIBS. We are strengthening the partnership as our response. There are a number of partners that education and our unit of the care and support is built across the spectrum of those social ills. We've got a unit within that is sports and enrichment. We've got a unit that deals with nutrition for learners. We've got the health units within the branch that deals with the health of the learners. We've got the school safety that deals with violence and those incidents. So broadly, each one of those then develops its own networks. I work with SAPS. I work with Social Development, Department of Health, Department of Justice, Department of Transport for Road Safety for Learners, the Road and Transport Management Corporation, the Road Accident Fund, so that the learners that are involved in accidents, because of the protocol and the MOU that we have with the Department of Transport, the learners are prioritized. You will remember the incident, Chairperson, of Bronco Sprayed. You could see how that relationship panned out. All those 18 families were taken care of to the last post, and continuously so. And finally, we are saying it takes all the role players, Chairperson, as the DG has indicated. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. We are not going to engage with the presentation now. We will immediately go to the SAPS to do the presentation as it was scheduled. I would suppose that all the members, including Honorable Nchaisa, you are welcomed, and that you have got all the relevant documents. I'm saying we hope that you have all the relevant documents. Okay. DG will now take the SAPS as your partner. After that, members, don't forget, Honorable Nchaisa, as we do the engagement, each member has got five opportunities to raise questions. You've got an opportunity to raise five questions and then follow up. Yes. Sure. Thank you. Yeah. It's one presentation. These are partners. They are partners. But you know that approach gives you multiple opportunities to even do the follow-ups. So we just want to highlight the fact that we are going to have another presentation from KZN. SAPS, over to you.
Okay, I think I must just continue from where I stopped. Actually, we are actually on the slide number 5, which talks to the aims of the protocol, and I think most of them, Mr. Njove has covered them. But maybe just to summarize them, that it talks to the promotion of a proactive intervention so that we can be able to detect and enrich early childhood development to be able to promote resilience against offending behaviors. and also to promote also from the other side the image of the South African Police Service, therefore building a relationship between the schools and the police stations, the community, and the children of the learners. Promote the use of the crime prevention in order to ensure school safety and build understanding regarding the importance of the prevention thereof. So those are basically the aims of the protocol, which is assisting us to be able to render the school safety programs. Continuing on that one is the rendering thereof of the school safety school-based crime prevention services that is actually ensuring that we are proactive in what we're doing. And encourage the integrated and multidisciplinary approach towards crime prevention and development to mobilize the relevant stakeholders, because as Mr. Njove has indicated, the police alone or the Department of Basic Education alone cannot be able to do it. So we need to mobilize all them multidisciplinary or other departments to be able to deal with it. To use the community-based and inclusive approach to address the needs of the community through the schools-based crime prevention and policing. Remember, we also have the community, as Mr. Njove has indicated, that the community has an influence on the behavior of the children. So it won't help us if we focus more on the schools and we leave the community behind. So we are trying by all means that even our schools programs that we are having, the community is part of it. So maybe just to talk to the progress in terms of the linkage as it was outlined in the protocol, that we must link the school with the police station. But mainly what we're doing is to ensure that at each school, there should be a coordinator, a member of the South African Police Service, who is actually responsible to take charge of whatever the issues relating to violence or crimes that are happening in that specific school. So far what I can indicate is that, as it is highlighted there, the provinces that are still behind in terms of the linkages is Eastern Cape, is KwaZulu-Natal, as well as Northwest. The rest, they have linked all their schools. But what I can confirm, Honorable Chairperson, is that Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, the KwaZulu-Natal and Northwest, they have confirmed that they have already finalized the linkages. We are just awaiting the audit so that at the beginning of the year we can be able to have the confirmation. The only one that is still behind is the Eastern Cape, of which is receiving attention. As I'm talking now, our team is actually at Eastern Cape to be able to detect what are the challenges internally, because for now we cannot be able to link the schools. Therefore, we will make sure that at the beginning of the year, next year when the schools are reopening, we can make sure that all the linkages have been done at Eastern Cape. In a nutshell, in the next slides is, as Ms. Njove was indicating, from 24,844 schools, a total of 23,064 have been linked, which is actually 92.8% of the schools in the country that have been linked. As I've indicated, the others have already done it. It's just a matter of making sure that we finalize the process of audit and capture them. The programs, after we have linked the schools, we realize that linking in itself cannot be able to give us any impact or any result. So as we're linking, we're busy with the programs. But however, after we have realized that most of the schools have been linked, then we started focusing on the programs to make sure that those programs that we are conducting at the schools, they have an impact. So in terms of the programs, what is happening is that we sit with the Department of Basic Education and identify the programs for a specific school. Say maybe there's a problem of drugs in a specific school. Or maybe we might be able to identify even five programs for a specific school. But those programs will run for a specific period, maybe for 3 months, with different activities. If maybe we are addressing the issues of drugs, the issue of testing will be covered. The issues of searches will also be covered. The awarenesses, where we are talking to the learners on the awarenesses of drugs, where we're also involving the FCL, the forensic services will also be taking place. So in what we are focusing on, as I've already indicated, is substance abuse. We're talking to the bullying issues and the teenage pregnancy. The Department of Health will also play a role. We talk to the theft, the gangsterism as a challenge currently in some of the provinces. Vandalism also is a problem. Gender-based violence and sexual offenses, where you find some of the children are actually like they were raped, either at home or even at school. Those are the issues that you're talking about, the dangerous weapons, where we're doing the searches. The all cult-related crimes and harmful religious practices, where you have kids killing each other for different reasons. Also, we talk to those things because we also have a unit that is specifically dealing with those things. And we talk to the safety awareness, which talks to the safety hints. And then unlawful administration of corporal punishment also comes in. So these are the focus areas in terms of the programs that we are conducting. You might have one program that is addressing most of the issues that have been raised here, or you might have different programs that is addressing different issues that are highlighted here, depending on the scale of the challenge. But besides the programs that we are having, we realize that because the number of schools are too many and we don't have enough police officers, remember, if for you to have those programs, you will need members. So we, as national, we said the provinces should continue with their schools that have challenges. But from national, we said we need to identify the hotspot schools. So in identifying hotspot schools, we again sit with the Department of Basic Education and ourselves. We identify those schools on the basis of the prevalence of the crime threat, and we use the local crime threat analysis to be able to detect that. And we also look at the reports from Department of Education to check where are the challenges. And we also focus on the reports and the prevention operations that we are conducting around those schools, whether there's something that is happening or not. So the elements, as I've indicated, will also include the crime prevention operation. It will also include the awareness campaigns and the community or educative programs. Just to indicate, maybe for the period 2016 and 2017 to date, in terms of the APP, remember, the APP is only on those that have been identified, that are being monitored at national level, but the provinces, they continue to make sure that for every school where there is a challenge, they must actually be able to attend to it. The total number of schools that were identified during the period 2016-2017 were 1,212. And out of those schools, we made sure that at all the schools we have programs. And unfortunately, there were two schools, of which one of them was merged with another one, and the other one was closed. So in a nutshell, we can just confirm that we have made sure that we have programs as per the identified schools. But the total number of 6,882 programs were conducted in those schools which were not included as part of the identified schools, because I've indicated that the identified schools is mostly for the purpose of us at national to be able to monitor the hotspot schools. For this current period, we have identified 1,250,000, and to date we have conducted 620,000 programs. And for those that we are continuing doing in terms of the maintenance, so far we have done 3,672. The next slide is actually just a breakdown in terms of the provinces, so that we can be aware of where the provinces are in terms of the program from 2016 to 2017. So maybe going to the challenges. One challenge that we are having is around the early interventions, but I think with the programs that we are having, the department has implemented, like the one for drug testing, and maybe let me just focus on the drug testing. The one for the drug testing can actually be able to assist us to be able to detect and come up with the early intervention, because once you test for a drugs, and you find that the person is as tested positive, then it will mean that between us and the other departments that are involved, like health, like social development, then we can come up with a program that can assist those kids. The other thing is an adequate infrastructure of medical examination. We know there's a challenge at schools in terms, but not only at the schools, in all the government departments in terms of resources. Sometimes it's difficult to get, if maybe there is a case of a sexual offences that has been happened. Sometimes, especially in the rural areas where they're struggling mainly to get the attention of medical examination. So that is the issue that was raised by the colleagues at the ground level. But this we have discussed with the Department of Health so that we can find a way on how we're going to assist our colleagues at the local level. The other challenge, as I've indicated, is where now you will have a situation that you have one police station, but within one police station there's four or five schools. And each school, then you have to allocate a member, which becomes a problem. And you, at some stage, you find one member is allocated to even more than five schools where there's many schools. And then at the end of the day, it affects the programs because you can't have a police officer in all the schools. But at least we are covering them in terms of making sure that for those that are critical, we must make sure that we give them attention. The inadequate involvement is mainly around, but I think the protocol that we are busy reviewing now and we're trying to involve the other departments is to say, if we need social development as a matter of agency, how then are we going to make sure that we get those services? If we need a Department of Health as urgently as possible, how then are we going to be making sure that we get those services? Because you find at some stage there are critical cases where you need the services of those departments urgently. But I think with the protocol that we are working on, we will be able to get them on board. A way forward is joint annual planning that is being conducted and the standardized monitoring and evaluation tool that will be utilized. We already had a meeting with Department of Education. We are working on that one so that when we're talking about the hotspot schools, both of us are having them. If we're saying we have identified as national so many schools, both of the departments will be reporting on the same figure, on the same schools. So if we identify schools as hotspots, as we are doing it together, we can be able to say these are the confirmed figures, these are the figures that can be covered in the, or can be included in both the APP of the basic education as well as the APP of the South African Police. And we're also talking about the intervention that will also be addressing the emerging challenges. Like you were talking about the social media, Ms. Njove spoke about the social media where issues have been trending on the bullying and all these things. What we having, what we have proposed when we were sitting with Mr. Njove, and is something that the DG and the National Commissioner will be discussing about, is the interventions that we will be conducting to those schools specifically from national level. We know the provinces are actually giving those attention, but we also want to have an intervention from national so that we can check the impact of our intervention. So, and the other thing is the alignment of the databases so that we have the same, because now the challenge is around the merging again of some of the schools so that we monitor the database so that we have the corresponding figures between the two of us. The strengthening of committee, and which will also include the civil society, that is another way, the other thing that we are working on, because we have the CPFs that we are working with. So what we want to do is actually to bring in the involvement of the CPFs within the school's committee, to be able to involve the civil community or the civil society in addressing the challenges at schools. In conclusion, I don't think I need to emphasize more, but because it has been covered by my colleague, but one thing that is very important in terms of the school safety is that we need to have ownership. We need to have an involvement or participation of the relevant or all other stakeholders. We cannot do it alone as basic education and the South African Police. We know the community. We know the social issues that are coming from the communities, actually have an influence on the behavior of the kids. But we need everybody. We need the parents, we need the government, we need the civil society, we need to work with the community so that we can be able to deal with the challenges that we are facing at the schools. But maybe, so my apology, Chairperson, maybe before I stop, I should talk to the issue of the closing down of the liquor outlets. As the South African Police Services, yes, we are working on the closing down of the liquor outlets, and the indication on 500 meters radius from or close proximity of the schools. But what I can indicate in terms of the close proximity, we don't have, or I don't have the figures now in terms of the school specific, that talks to the specific to close proximity of the schools. But what I can indicate is that for the period 2016 to 2017, we're able to close 15,187 liquor outlets that were not registered. You will have two issues here. You will have you will have those that are legalized in terms of them having the permits or having the licenses. And you will have those that are not having the licenses. Those are the ones that we are focusing on to make sure that we close all of them. But you also have those that are having the permits. Remember, if they already have the permits and they are sitting at a close proximity of the school, then the responsibility then shifts to the liquor board. So the closing of those, because they already have issued the permit or they have issued the license, which is done by the liquor board, then it's the responsibility of the liquor board to be able to close that have or those that have already been opened. But for now, I can indicate that for today, up until today, from April to September, we have closed 5,520. We are still working out the program in terms of linking the distances from the schools and the places where we have closed this one, of which we can be able to provide in the near future. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, colleagues, for the comprehensive report. Indeed, it has given us enlightenment on whatever responses that you are making with regard to dealing with this very difficult matter of school safety. Because for us as the portfolio committee, it is the issue of school safety is of critical importance, because no way, there's no way that you can find that learners will be free to learn when the environment is contaminated by violence and the infrastructure is insecure, you know, and all these those elements that you have highlighted in the report. Thank you very much. And I would suppose that members were noting, I have noted members as part of the engagement, Honorable Basson, Honorable Khosa, Honorable Olis, Honorable Mchaisa, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to both of the presenters. You know, the point on the table today is a really worrying factor, because whenever you open a media or you watch media, you hear about the violence at schools. Even on our coming to work this morning in the bus, the point was on violence at schools. And one member asked me, why is violence on schools or at schools now so popular on the media? Then I said, maybe it's because now of democracy. People are getting educated, And now people, they know their rights, and learners are wiser than before, and they report. I thank you for the strategies and programs that you have. Although the problem is still huge outside. My question is just, we have these strategies. We have these programs, but the violence continues. What can we tell the house today? What is the problem? Is it because our strategies are inadequate or are not effective? There's a slide that projected that shows that Northern Cape is the highest in bullying. Then MEM's presentation shows that Northern Cape is 100% trained. All 540 schools are trained on these prevention programs. So my question is, what can be the problem? Do we monitor these programs? Are the programs being effectively implemented? If the schools of Northern Cape is fewer as they are, 540, all are linked to the police stations, and you find that the bullying crime is still high in Northern Cape. And then recently the news were dominated by KZN incidents, bullying incidents at school. But the slide you showed, Mr. Njobe, is mum about KZN. There's no bar whether it's declining or it's going down or it's going up. What can be the reason of having that? You have reported nothing on KZN. I'm glad that Operation Tlaiseka, of which I learned that programs like UNICEF and Adopt-A-Cop are included in such program. But how are these programs being monitored? Are they functional, or they are just one of the programs that are there for compliance? How functional are they? I'm sure yesterday I received this media warnings, the social media that is warning parents that parents should encourage their children to use Kindle website than Google when doing their projects or when searching for images. Are we also aware of that, or how can we popularize that information? Because children are so exposed in this cruel part of internet that they take as if I mean, they tell the parents that we are doing homework, whereas they are using wrong website and so on. How can we popularize that? Because it is really both our presentations mentioned the closing of illegal shipping and liquor outlets. I'm worried because I have a problem in my constituents where the school is taken to the shipping and liquor within 500 meters radius. So if then you are going to close that, and as we were trying to address, and the owners of those shipping, they said you brought the school to us. How can you advise me to address such a problem? It's a big school, it's a beautiful school, it's a new school, status of the art school, the only one in the area, and it has been built in that area whereby the leakers and shipping. How can you advise me how to tackle that? Lastly, Chairperson, just for oversight, we are trying to read that wrong or DJ. No, DJ. They, at four, I'm counting now, I labeled them. For oversight, DJ, just for oversight person, Mr. Njobe have mentioned some programs that are supposed to be available at schools. I want just to make sure that when going to each and every school, are we going to be able to get these documents like e-safety guidelines to address this cyberbullying, so that we advise the schools about this, the prevention of bullying programs and so on. All these, you mentioned them one by one. Are they available at each and every school that we may visit? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Kosa.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks, DG, and the subs, generals, for the presentation. Yes, Chairperson, firstly, I'm happy the DG has indicated that there is really a healthy working relationship between them and SAPS. What we requesting is for this relationship to be seen to be happening on the ground, and that was not a question. Yes, and the other issue which is not a question, I want to advance to where General has indicated that police station equals to about four schools. Where I am coming from, General, one police station equals to plus minus 30 schools. And I'm talking of a satellite police station, not a police station, a satellite equals to 30 schools. Yes. My first question is with regard to the issue of closing Shebeens and liquor outlets that are closer to the schools, and dealing with drug lords in the community. I think that is going to assist us, because most of the drugs, they are not bought from schools, they are not sold from schools. It's very few incidents where you will find that a teacher was selling drugs, a learner was selling drugs. But they buy drugs from the community, take them with to schools. So if we can start to deal with that, and to also engage, where is COCTA as a stakeholder with regard to the implementation of the bylaws? Because the shebeens that we are talking about, some of them, have got licenses, but they are not in a stand. You cannot say, we cannot only look at liquor board only, because liquor board gives license not having consulted with the municipality, because they are supposed to be consulting with the there must be a council resolution for any business, even spaza shops. If you want to open such things, there must be a council resolution. But you find that liquor board has issued a license to a tavern that does not even have a stand. It is just on the on a side road. You see where in their market stalls, where our mummies are selling bananas, tomatoes and the like. You find a shebeen that has licenses there. You see, then we need liquor board to be on board with us. We need to be on top of them so that we'll be able to be assisting on those things. I know of many of those that are having illegal licenses. I call them illegal licenses if they never went through the municipality council resolutions, because they are supposed to be doing that. Then the other issue is how effective DG are the RCLs, SGB and QLTC in our communities with regard to school safety. They've just mentioned, Mr. Njove, that we also have a school safety committee. Is this linked to the SGB and QLTC, or is it a standalone committee? If really it's a standalone committee, we'll be having so many ineffective committees in school, and they will be expecting the principal to be part of those committees, and he will no longer be managing the schools. If really those committees were going to add, we have a problem, we will put a committee on that particular problem. There's a problem, we put a committee. I wanted the effectiveness of those that are currently there, those that we're having. And number three, it's with regard the statement by His Majesty the King on corporal punishment. I only heard one NGO responding. I am awaiting the response from the department as to what is your comment, because you know, when I am a leader like myself as a politician, if I can go and stand before community say, lendaba corporal punishment, it confuses the community. So you need to come in and assist there. Lastly, the visibility chair of policing and patrols, SAPs. Yes, I do hear you, but do you have capacity to do such? As I've just indicated, that one police station is equals up to plus minus 30 schools. And in a satellite police station, you know what we find there? One police officer who is seated there waiting for people to come and report cases. One police officer. That we say, when we are in a working relationship, it is on paper. Because even if the principal can phone that police officer, there's no one who's going to write to the school to go and look to that learner who is very high on drugs and doing bullying, or those that happened in Bushbuck Grishe. I think it's a month or two, wherein somebody went to school and shot the teacher there. If you report that, you will find the policeman who is busy in the office. He can't move from the office to go and assist. He or she is seated at the office, but we call it a satellite police station. And we count them. If we say, how many police stations do we have? We even count those that are only having one person. So can we be maybe trying to be assisting on that, in that regard. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ollis.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to both the police and the department for their presentations. The DA has been doing some of our own research by doing site visits, and we've come across some disturbing trends. You talk about early interventions being required, and I agree with you, but some of the things we're finding are quite disturbing. There are situations, I hear that it's in the Northern Cape from my colleagues, where a teacher who has been accused of rape or sexual assault doesn't get reported because the school principal, if that teacher is removed, then has a vacancy. And if it's in a highly skilled subject, for example, maths, where there is a shortage of teachers, they can't find a teacher, they will not want to report that teacher for that sexual assault or that rape, because if they lose that teacher, it's difficult to replace the teacher. We have heard of examples even where the teacher, the school principal will pay the family of the learner that was assaulted money to keep quiet, to hush up that case, so that they don't have that teacher removed. Now, obviously, we can't let that continue, but it requires an intervention, because what we've got to do, obviously, is convince the parents not to take money and to go and report that case, because what they are doing is perpetuating a problem. That teacher will do it again. And we've got to find interventions that educate parents, that inform parents, and I would like to know what interventions we can do to educate and inform parents about that problem, that they do not hush up these cases, that they go and report it to the police. The second situation we've discovered is a case where there's a general strike called in education, and the teachers go on strike, and the principal also goes on strike, and then there are some learners wandering around a school without adult supervision. And there are cases in Mpumalanga where the principal also went on the strike, and there was no adult supervision, and some learners remained behind, and some sexual assaults occurred on the school property of learners that remained behind. We in the DA are trying to push now for the Essential Services Committee to regulate that certain leadership positions in a school are declared an essential service, so that there is not a situation where learners and children are on school property without adult supervision, because, you know, God knows what can happen. Someone can be stabbed, someone can be raped or assaulted, and I want to know what the department thinks of that, because we do not accept that you can have learners on a school property without adult supervision. It's too dangerous. In terms of my third question, drug testing, yes, in the Western Cape, our MEC has conducted drug testing recently. 1,000 learners were tested who were suspected of taking drugs. And of those 1,000 approximately that were tested, 66% of them tested positive for drugs. So my question to the department is, as a national department, what are you doing to sort of twist the arm of social development as a department to do more now that we know where there are hotspots of drugs and where we have identified learners that are taking drugs and arriving at school having taken drugs? What is the social development department being asked to do to go and intervene there, to go and talk to those parents and to those learners and put programs in place to get those kids off the drugs? It's often cannabis, but sometimes it's hard drugs as well. And those learners arrive at school high on drugs. You can't teach them anything when they're high on drugs. I know this. When I was in high school, a friend of mine got hooked on drugs, and he's ruined his whole life. We've got to get them off. That's my third question. Then in terms of the Eastern Cape, I'm very concerned, and this question is directed to the police. It seems that the police in the Eastern Cape are fast asleep. If you look at your slide of programs conducted in 2016-17 to date, number of schools identified in 2016-17 in the Eastern Cape, 3. 3! Look at the other provinces. There's no other provinces less than 30, but in the Eastern Cape, only 3. If you turn some other pages over, you come to, again, the Eastern Cape on the total number of schools linked per province. Again, 1,284 schools in the Eastern Cape not linked. What is the matter with SAPS in the Eastern Cape? they seem to me to be fast asleep in terms of school safety. The other provinces, SAPS is doing quite a lot of work. You can see it in these charts that you've presented. So we're very, you know, encouraged in other provinces. But there's something wrong in the Eastern Cape. The SAPS in the Eastern Cape are fast asleep. Can you do something to wake them up to this problem of school safety, please? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chaisen.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. DG, I agree with you now when you say your core business is teaching and learning, but education is developing a lot these days. But I'm sure you're aware, that is why now you are beginning now to have
Honorable Chaisa, can you let the mic face you? Sure.
Oh, thank you very much. I was saying, DJ, I do agree with you when you say now the core business, your core business, teaching and learning, that is correct. But now education is developing a lot. But I can see that you are beginning now to try to come together with these other departments as you are doing with SAPS. But it should not be just a matter of coming together. You should also work together for a success. That is very important. Because this issue of interdepartmental is very important. That departments should come together and work together for a good success. Again, Chairperson, these days teachers now, teaching should be in totality. For instance now, teaching a learner that you can't see that learner is being bullied, something else, because a teacher is trained, then you can see things. You can see that this learner now has got sort of a disturbance, is being bullied. Besides now being seen or discovered by something else, that should start with a teacher. So that is why I'm saying that teaching should be in totality. You should see these things, then should be reported quick. You know, some schools, or the chairperson, do not observe the rule of law. For instance, this case of corporal punishment that is happening in our schools would lead to anger on the part of other learners, some learners. Then this will ultimately be part of violence. Because if you keep on now punishing learners, whereas they know that you are not supposed to do it, now they will come together and turn against you as teachers, then there will be violence in the school. For instance, now, in that region of Alfredo, there is a senior school there, Makaula senior school, that is using this corporal punishment. You can imagine now when learners, girl child, are to be to receive lashes on the buttocks. That is happening. And the officials, the education, are just keeping quiet about that, and they are aware. So those are some of the things now that may just cause violence, because learners will go on strike one day. That is why I'm saying now the schools now should learn to observe the rule of law. And I can even cite now the example of whereby no fee school will now cause or will just force parents to pay. Then nothing's done about that. And there was sort of a violence because of that at the state school there. The learners and parents now were just standing against the school there. That school of Zuela, the senior school in Tabangul. That was happening. And we did go there and try now to talk. Those are some of the issues that will cause sort of a violence at schools. That's why I'm saying now, the school teachers and principals got to be smart so that they can deal with other things in a better way. Again, the issue of 500 meters of this liquidlet from school, it is not enough. I think it should be changed a little bit, at least up to 1,000 meters. Because it's too close, 500 liters, and you talk of illegal. Even now, the legal, these legal ones now can cause problems. At least now we should extend that one. Then the last one, now, don't you think, Chairperson, that now there should be involvement of these other stakeholders, like traditional leaders in the rural schools and ward councillors? because these traditional leaders are the very people that are always together with parents and their learners. Then if we just marginalize the traditional leaders and what counselors, there's going to be a problem. We should just involve all the stakeholders. Don't you think that should be another good idea to do it? So that at least now we come together, then we get rid of all these social ills and violence that are happening at our schools. I think for now we should end there. Thank you very much, Dr. Shepherd.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chaser and members. I also have my few questions that I want to raise with regard to the two presentations. Maybe to start off by thanking you for the presentation and also appreciating the efforts that are being put in place. The efforts that are being put in place to make sure that we are able to, you know, decisively deal with this problem of school violence and promoting safety in schools at the same time. From both sides, the DVE, and we would like to appreciate the infrastructure that has been put in place. As much as I agree with my colleagues, but I think I must appreciate it. Even though it is in some instances inadequate, because it provides a baseline for tackling that problem. On the part of basic education, the issue that most of the schools are secured, we know that in the past, it was very easy for thugs to just enter a school and do what they want in the grounds of the school. I remember when I was growing up, I'm sure I was in grade 5. No, standard 5, not grade 5, because I grade 7. Yes, you know, very early in the morning when we arrived at school, there was a person who hanged himself in the grounds of a school. I was in the middle school at that time. But he did not hang himself at the high school, because there was a high school nearby. There was a middle school nearby, but he chose the primary school, which is very traumatic. You know, I could not sleep for so many days after seeing that, even though we were warned not to go there because of being curious. We wanted to see what's really happening, and I would like to agree with the fact that in most cases, issues of trauma, violence, and lack of security do not emerge from the school. They are imported into the school environment, and in that case, I would also agree with the point that it needs joint action. And we appreciate the protocol that has been established, and we hope that it will be strengthened in a sense that it will add other departments that are also having a stake in that area, particularly the issue of counseling, psychosocial support is very critical, because in most cases you find that our learners, they do not get physically attacked, or you know, or they get exposed to things that can make them emotionally, you know, traumatized. So I think it's one area that is lacking, and the issue of peer counselors, it does not come. And I thought that the department could have highlighted that as one of the key areas where and positive points that the department developed during the process, you know, as it was evolving, because even though we didn't have sufficient resources, you didn't have sufficient resources, you were able in a way to come up with to deal with some of the problems, even though you don't have a counselor, the main counselor, a teacher counselor at school, you will always have that peer. And then one of the proposals that I have, having noted the programs that are there, is incorporating some of the programs in the life orientation program, wherein you know that even though the program might be like, as the SAPS has highlighted, that they target hotspots together with the department, and they target certain schools, and it might not be all schools that get the attention. So with such programs incorporated within the curriculum, you will be able to even, you know, increase the footprint in that way. The other point, like that, I have noted, also raised by my colleagues, is the issue of the involvement of other players. Like, I don't hear the SAPS talking about the role of the police reservists. What do they do? Can they really come in where the police are not available, and the CPF? I think let's look towards them for support. And then the issue of reporting. I wanted to know whether the department is effectively using, the Department of Basic Education is effectively using this reporting system to make sure that nobody escapes from the law, because sometimes our learners, as young as they are in primary and even at high school, they fail to report cases because there are so many things that threaten them. They are threatened. They see teachers being killed, and they see themselves being failed, and the parents are also, having a role to, discourage them from reporting such cases. So is there a way that the learners can report these cases anonymously without being identified? Because when we received the report of SAES told us they have got a backlog of offenders who are also teachers who are still in the system, and nothing can be done about them because there are no witnesses or the cases were withdrawn. So I think maybe we must consider that hotline, which must be known by the learners. If it's there in the department must make it known to us. As we do the constituency work, we must be able to tell the learners and the parents and the community about this hotline that is meant to assist in dealing with the monster of violence and, help to promote safety. I heard Mr. Njobe talking about the issue of school safety committees. I wanted to check how effective are they, and then more especially that most of the time we hear that the SGB committees, it's not all the SGBs that are fully functional, and you talked in the report that usually leadership, management and governance, they always dictate as to the prevalence of violence or safety in a school. So how effective are they? And then on the part of basic education, what is the alternative to corporal punishment? Is there an alternative? Because if you tell teachers who were brought up in a particular way, like almost all the teachers in South Africa, except for a few Funza Lushaka ones, they have been, they received corporal punishment. Even yourself there, you were corporally punished. And myself, I was corporally punished. So what is the alternative punishment that can be given to the learners? Because learners fight with teachers, and the report does not even give us an indication as to the violence with regard to the teachers, the employees in the school environment. It does not even talk to violence in the scholar transport, because in the bus so many things happen. That's where people, they get stabbed, the drugs are sold, the learners get harassed sexually and so forth. So where do we classify that one? And then the issue of, I don't know, colleagues will pardon me. I have got an issue on the girl child, the programs. No, I'm chairing. I must use that. The chairperson must also cover areas you have left out. Of course. I'm saying the issue, how do you, what are the programs that you have put in place to make sure that that you empower the girl child? And because the girl child continues to be a victim, and then are they adequate? And then, I like that issue that was said about the, maybe just to check how prevalent is this issue of violence in, you know, primary schools as opposed to high schools. Maybe if you can just illustrate to us, because if you check the TIMSS report of 2015, it says that in South Africa, majority of the primary school learners, they are exposed to bullying. But I just want to get a clarity on the global discussion that we are having. How are they strongly affected? I'll stop there. Thank you very much, colleagues, and give over to the DG and the team.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, colleagues. Chair, let me start with the questions that you've asked. I don't recall making a comparison between primary and secondary schools, but maybe we can go back and check whether the TIMSS data has been disaggregated between primary and secondary schools, because it covered grade 5 and grade 9. So maybe if we disaggregate that, we could arrive to some conclusion as to what is the split between the two. But let me also make just a general comment, Chair, because I've tried to correct this, but it doesn't seem to have worked. There are probably several possibilities. Either I was inarticulate, I'll try to be articulate this time. I wouldn't like to blame anyone except myself. The abolition of corporal punishment, it's not confined to schools only. In this country, no one is allowed to administer corporal punishment anywhere. In fact, universally, corporal punishment is abhorred. In the whole world, it's not allowed. Especially if you are a member of UNESCO and so on. In South African schools, it is not allowed in terms of Section 9 of the South African Schools Act. In South Africa as a country, is not allowed in terms of Section 12 of the Constitution. I'm not even allowed to administer it in my own homestead or in my own family. The Constitution, which is the supreme law of the country, doesn't allow that. So let's have it very abundantly clear, because people think that it's not only allowed in schools. Anywhere in this country, corporal punishment is not allowed anywhere. I think that is very important to understand, because any other thing, then we operate in the purview of ignorance. Because people think that it's only schools that do not allow corporal punishment. It's not like that. Section 12, I want to repeat, of the Constitution. In fact, Section 9, because some of us were part of drafting the South African Schools Act. Section 9 comes from Section 12 of the Constitution. If the supreme law of the country does not allow, something, any legislation or policy which is subordinate to the supreme law of the country cannot go against that, will be deemed to be invalid. That's how it works in law. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that appreciating the concerns that honorable members raise, and I've always appreciated them because they help us, they make us better. Every time when we leave your meetings, we leave with an awful amount of insights that help us to even go back and do our work better. But please remember that we come from a history of violence. And what we see today is not peculiar to this country. In fact, we're getting better, in my own humble view and my own humble opinion. Even if you compare the states of violence in our schools and states of violence elsewhere, I mean, you have not seen mass shootings in schools like in the U.S., in South Africa. But I'm not saying we shouldn't do anything about what's happening. We must nip it in the bud. Our target must be to reduce it to zero. It shouldn't happen. Our children must learn under a conducive environment for teaching and learning. And the point that I was raising also, Honorable Nchaise, about saying these things are detracting us from our core business. You know, clinically speaking, as somebody in education, indeed our core business is education, and our core business is to ensure that schools remain incubators of future citizenry. If we pay more attention on these issues, we don't get enough time to push issues of quality and efficiency in education. That's the point that I'm making. They take too much of our time and energy. And the unfortunate bit is that some of them are a spillover from civil society. Let me take, for instance, the case that Honorable Khoza referred to from a school in Bushbuck Ridge. It's a matter that emanated from family violence. You look at it from whatever angle. It's couples, it involved couples, or it emanated from a relationship of two adults. There was a misunderstanding between the two of them, but the violence happened on school grounds. Mr. Njobe, in his presentation, tried to paint the picture of the analysis that you are making, that you've got these categories that constitute violence. But schooling is just but one. And many of them spill over. I've come across, Honorable Chair, pictures of bodies lying all over the school grounds in the Western Cape here, where learners have to walk over or across those bodies to go to the classrooms. You know, gang violence, and not once, many times. In the Western Cape here, in many areas that are affected by gang violence. I'm just saying this problem is bigger than us. It requires everybody. We can't run away from it, unfortunately, because it affects, you know, the space where we are operating, unfortunately. And I take the point that Honorable Nchaise raised, that indeed we need to work with everybody to make sure that we tackle this problem. And I also want to say the relationship between SAPS and education can even work out much better. Your observation is right. It's there, but you must be very hard on us, as you usually do, and say it's not enough. And that we accept. We can do more, and the reason why we are even meeting after this meeting is to strengthen the work that we're doing. We intend even taking it down at provincial level, up to local level, to strengthen that relationship so that we maximize our efforts of creating a conducive environment. And of course, it does not only involve these two departments, social development, as Honorable Ollis correctly observed. You need to have a similar, if not better, working relationship even with social development and other departments and so on. But I must accept it does not always follow that that happens with all departments. But we'll definitely work on this. But what I have seen working as part of the effort of this committee is to get us in this manner under one roof and say education, health, social development, these are the gaps that we see in the work that you do. And I want to encourage you to continue to do that, time permitting and, of course, the program allowing. Honorable Mokoto, alternatives to corporal punishment, we do have them. There's something called positive behavior interventions and support. But as I've said, you know, it's very difficult for adults to unlearn behaviors inculcated over years. I don't even want to use the analogy of difficult to teach an old dog new tricks. But if you like, you can take it to that scale. But it is true. I mean, we see it even in teaching, you know. Part of our problems in improving learning outcomes is the way people were trained. They were trained to teach badly by, you know, apartheid government. And over 80% of those people are still in the system. And you are still expected to improve the results with them. We've run many workshops over 23 years. I mean, evidence has shown that the impact is very little or no impact at all. Because it's very difficult to get adults to change behavior, you know, learned and inculcated over time. So we have that, but I was, again, part of the team, by the way, when the South African Schools Act was about to be implemented, who went around the country training teachers and going on advocacy to say corporal punishment is no longer allowed. And here are the alternatives. But the impact of that hasn't been that much. I concede, I accept that we still have to do more to ensure that we improve on that. The effectiveness of the school safety committees, I'm sure Mr. Njobe will say something about it, but the fact that school violence in schools has not precipitated to unprecedented proportions. My own humble submission again says that it shows that some of these structures are indeed working. And the situation varies from one school, even linking schools to police stations. It is working. Maybe we need to start bringing more evidence to meetings of this nature to show, you know, incidents where, you know, schools reported and the outcome of that and so on. So we will strengthen that going forward. The hotline, Honorable Mokoto, we do have a hotline, and it's even in the workbooks, in the pages of the workbooks that we distribute to all schools in the country. It might be possible that people have not picked it up, despite the fact that it's on the workbooks that are received by all schools in South Africa. So we'll continue to popularize the number so that they use it, but there's a presidential hotline, but in the department there's a hotline where schools and members of the community are at liberty to use it to report whatever matter. And we do get many cases that are reported through our hotline. And I'm not sure whether you'd want me to give you the number. The number is here before me. But in the interest of time, I will desist from doing so. Yeah, but I've got it here. And then you also talked about peer counseling. We also have what we call school-based support teams. which could also be used for, you know, counseling and support, and that this will also continue to popularize. Intergovernmental relations that need strengthening, I've spoken to that, I accept. More often than not, we tend to focus on your performance agreement and very little about contributing to the acting national commissioner's performance agreement, because I'm worried about what's going to happen when I go for my review. But I must also hasten to say that it shouldn't be something that is common to all departments. Many departments are indeed working together. You've convened us, in fact, summoned us even with sports and recreation. You have seen how we are working together with that department. And today, ISAPS, you can also see how we're really trying to work together. The extent to which our schools are secured, from a fencing point of view, there's a problem. There's a problem, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. School fences get removed by communities for various reasons. Some of it is to use that fence for other things, for even building a shack or doing something. Other things is to gain access into the school premises to have free water that people won't be able to pay for, and we end up taking the bill. The other reason is to have access to what is in the school premises, like Mr. Njobe said. MEC Lesufi is virtually at the point of even reconsidering the wonderful innovations that he came up with in Gauteng, of providing tablets, of providing smart boards and so on, because that has increased the level of vandalism and theft in schools. They've even gone to use money allocated for norms and standards, which would be for running costs. Those are now used for your, I wouldn't call them your classical security personnel. They are somewhere your pseudo, you know, security personnel, because they wouldn't do much, as you would have seen in the incidents of, you know, one school in the East Rand, to pay for those security personnel to secure, to some extent, you know, what is within the school premises. This is a big societal problem. And I'm saying, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, why is it when you go to India, you find a computer plugged on the wall, and that computer is not removed and vandalized? For instance, you go to schools, even in those countries, schools remain sacred places. Even when, you know, groups are, you know, fighting each other, they know that schools are sacred places, you know, because they are about preparing the future of any nation. But why is it, why is it that, you know, the thinking is not the same, even in South Africa? Honorable Nchaisi, the involvement of traditional leaders, we welcome that. We haven't done much in that regard, except for, to some extent, at the level of the QLTC. But in terms of school safety, I think it's an eye-opener. We might have to pay more attention to it. The 500 meters, this is 1,000 meters. I'll leave it to my subs, colleagues, and Mr. Njobe, whether... it's a good idea. I would even say 10 kilometers is unreasonable. It would mean that it's the entire community now. You don't want Shebeens to be anywhere in the community. Some of the schools that do not observe the law, I agree with you. I meet with school principals every year. I try to meet with them at least once a year. All 25,000 principals, and some of these things, we talk about them and we raise them in these meetings. But we should also be very clear not to suggest that learners have a right to hit back at teachers when teachers administer corporal punishment. And I know your moral standing is very clear. It shouldn't happen. It doesn't mean that it gives them the license, you know, to hit back at teachers. Training teachers in totality, we're trying to do that. And I must be honest with you, teachers are getting increasingly overwhelmed. Increasingly overwhelmed because of the disintegration of our social fiber. There is increasingly very little involvement and responsibility of parents in South Africa. Learners are dumped into schools. Teachers have to teach and do everything. Some of them have even adopted these learners. And I'm saying, and I'm raising this with you because you are public representatives. You have an enormous contribution to make to help us deal with this challenge that we are faced with. And I'm making a special plea and a humble submission in this regard. I accept that we need to strengthen our relationship further with SAPS and make sure that programs that we are implementing are effective. Honorable Ollies, I've spoken about social development. We can only do better. I do accept the observation that you are making that we could be doing much better. We are working together. We have regular meetings. But all that I'm saying is that following up on these cases that you have pointed out, we can just make sure that we are faster and we are able to get the report back and get the data whether things are working or not. I am, for instance, chairing a priority committee which has been established by FOSAT, looking at drug abuse, which is linked to violence and gangsterism, you know, those triple challenges. So we are working together there, but all that I'm saying is that we can do much better than what we've done so far. Otherwise, if we're meeting your expectation, I'm sure you wouldn't have raised the issue. Pushing education to be an essential service. When we discussed, some honorable members of this committee will recall that when we discussed the report on the selling of posts, that matter came to the fore. It came to the fore, and we said what we need to do is to consider amendments in the Constitution and the Labor Relations Act. That was the view of the minister. If we can move in that direction, it would indeed be wonderful, you know, for this country. And if we succeed in that as a department, it would be good news. And I'm not sure about unions. I'm sure unions would have a different view. But as a department, that would be wonderful. That would really be wonderful. You are right in instances where you've got a strike, and I'm sure there's one coming soon. You would have heard about it. You do have those challenges, especially if principals are involved. But what we usually do is to send out a survey to find out as to which and how many principals and school management teams are going to get involved in a strike action, and teachers who are involved, so that we take precautions and we advise parents accordingly. So that's what we usually do. Education for parents who end up dropping cases because they are given money. Well, we could do that through school governing body structures, but my own view is that it's much bigger than that. It's linked to poverty in this country and moral decay. It's linked to poverty and moral decay. Many of us come from poor families, but you valued, you know, integrity and, you know, a sound value system over money. You'd even be prepared to continue being poor rather than to take money and not confront issues that are threatening our value system. Yeah, especially your daughter. And in my mind comes a case of that lady who had to even confront the, you know, the three criminals or so. And I think for me, that was the best thing that, you know, any human being could have done. Yeah. Under the circumstances. So, but the fact that if teachers get reported, then the school will be without a teacher. It is not true. The post is still available. The post would still be available to the school, unless if the school, the principal values the person more than the learner. And that would be very strange. It would mean that our children are in wrong hands. Yeah. It's probably a lack of education as well and appropriate information. And if we could get details, we'd be able to confront this. In the Northern Cape, for instance, I know of a case of one teacher who's gone, who was involved in those cases of learners who were impregnated by teachers. And I also know of action that has been taken by both the MEC and the head of the department regarding other teachers. And we've been encouraged by the speed at which both the MEC and the HOD acted on those cases. And we are following them up. And we'll make sure that we'll update you on developments in those cases as we undertook before. Honorable Ollis, about the research that you have conducted, I would plead that you share it with us as well, as I usually do when we have information that I think could be of value to you or even to other honorable members. It would be useful to help to strengthen our efforts in terms of dealing with school safety or violence in schools. I've spoken to the shooting, Honorable Khoza, in the Bushbuck Ridge, that it emanated from family violence and it was just a spillover into our school premises. Corporal punishment and the comment made by the king. You know, I operate in the spaces where there are these traditional leaders. I wouldn't want to say something that goes against because I might be prevented from operating. Last week, for instance, I was in the Nongoma area and the Zululand area. But I'm told that the minister has made a profound comment on this, which goes against what the king remarked on last week when the minister spoke in an event of one union. So I'm sure that should suffice. Yeah. Effectiveness of RCLs, SGBs, all of this should come together under the QLTC. And as we have indicated before, there are areas where QLTC works in a very wonderful way, like in the Free State, for instance. I know that almost in every district, QLTC is up and running. In Limpopo, in the Vuani area, it got overwhelmed by what was happening there. So you don't get it effective and working as it should in all areas in the country. That's all that I can say. And I'm sure that we can do better. And I do accept, Honorable Khoza, that we've been working through SALGA. Maybe we need to start bringing in COCTA as well, so that we have the same relationship that we have with SAPS and other departments. So we'll definitely consider that. Dealing with drug lords from communities, I'm sure we can work with SAPS to do that. I know of instances where some of these drug lords have even recruited learners, using learners in school premises as proxies of selling drugs, or agents of selling drugs in schools. I do accept that we can strengthen our relationship going forward. And Honorable Basson, about illegal shebeens and close proximity and so on. I thought colleagues made a clear distinction between legal and illegal shebeens. And they were saying illegal shebeens is their area. They are able to deal with those as quickly as possible. Those that are legal, it requires us to invoke other measures, such as bylaws, such as even liquor board, and I would assume even from national level, the Department of Trade and Industry could be a department that we are working with. So we'll definitely look at that. Measures to deal with cyberbullying, some form of violence. In the presentation that Mr. Njove made, we did indicate what we are trying to do, but we must also appreciate the fact that we are a global village. It makes it even more difficult. These children learn quickly. Learn through social media, they learn through, you know, various forms of media. So it complicates our space, which requires that we must move very fast in dealing with all of these things. The impact and the functionality of programs, I've made a comment on that too, and one of the comments that I made is that, and by the way, social scientists are saying there is no upsurge in school violence. There is an increase in coverage, particularly by the media, whether you're talking your traditional media or social media, but also the access to technology has exposed that, and they are saying it does not necessarily mean that there's been an increase in incident, an unprecedented increase in incidents of violence. KZN dominating news in school violence incidents. I'm sure Mr. Njove will clarify that one. I thought it was not necessarily related to bullying, but it was related to incidents of violence and corporal punishment, as well as sexual abuse of learners by teachers or school principals. So those are the facts around KZN. And then, in fact, the highest province in bullying, in terms of the slide that has been provided to you, the slide in blue, is not even Northern Cape, it's Free State. Coincidentally, it's the Free State, if you look at the slide. Strategies and programs which do not seem to stop violence. I accept that we can do better, but there is a lot of improvement. The fact that we are able to tackle some of these things together, in my view, it's probably showing a positive trajectory. School violence remain a worrying factor. I fully agree with your with your sentiments that learners must learn under a very conducive environment, and we must bring this to zero. So I'm going to request Mr. Njove to add on some of the things that I didn't cover, and then colleagues from SABS to cover the rest of the things that related to them. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, and thanks, DG. There's only one matter, DG, that remained from Honorable Son, the question of cyberbullying and the availability of the documentations we referred to. We are currently printing the e-safety document that is talking to cyberbullying. So if you talk availability in school, it is just around your November, December onwards would have full coverage of all the schools. And all others that I referred to, this is just the latest development, but all others that I referred to, certainly they are available in schools. We have reprinted the NSSF and made sure that the previous 25,000, which was equal to the number of schools, on monitoring we go to schools to find that the schools have not been given. Either the district is keeping some, they say they distributed workshops, so we reprinted and said it's a priority. DG, we were not training schools. previously on NSSF. We were having the mandate as national to deal with province and districts. But realizing the gap, we have gone down to school levels. Currently, we have trained close to 7,000 schools directly where we have realized that there are gaps. And that training is ongoing. We hope to reach something like about 15,000, which is not directly what would have been our mandate, but we were supporting. On the matter of the QLTC DG, we must highlight that it has even come to the attention of the minister that it lacks effectiveness in other areas. As a result, normally these functional processes fall under the Director General, but the DG and the minister have lifted the QLTC to fall straight in terms of the aligned function. Both the DG and minister have given it the priority that even the Chief of Staff should lead it in the manner of thematic programs. That QLTC does not have to sit and write a program. We in school safety must indicate that we are running the following programs, and then it must come as your foot soldier to ensure that it does the preparatory work. If the gender desk in the education, which we refer to as social cohesion, have got programs, they will necessarily work together with QLTC to do the spade work. In that regard, we give it effectiveness. The DG has dealt with the matter of Honourable Ollis when I check the points here. And the question of Honourable Mchaise, they have been covered. I wanted to deal with the matter of DG from the Chairperson Mkoto. The scholar transport or any activity, when you talk about the learner code of conduct, whatever is organized, if learners are in a school in Mpumalanga, they get into a bus, they go into a function wherever up until Durban. The code of conduct and the school rules obtain at all levels. As long as they put the school uniform and the function is under the auspices of a school, the code of conduct obtains, not only within the environment of the school. The elements, Chairperson, on the social cohesion, we do have within the care and support branch, we've got school safety, we've got sports enrichment, we have social cohesion, we've got nutrition and health, and we deal with this as, in quote, a combo that we refer to as CSTL, care and support for teaching and learning. That is the focus of the branch. Dr. Whittle is coordinating. So all these areas at the level of basic education, which may not be sufficient, we are doing that. The question of SASMs, I referred to in the presentation that all what we need to do now is to heighten the utilization, because even if schools are rurally based, the SASMs does not require a web in the current format. They are able to populate the results of the school, they are populating the incident at school level, we are able to extrapolate. The only thing that what the DG is asking that the unit sort of lifts up is that question of it being web-based so that it can be live rather than using the system of old reporting. So those are the areas, Chair, that I believe that the DG would have required that I extrapolate. Finally, the protocol itself has all the associated sister organizations, especially the NGO level, the Child Line, the Border Institute for Counseling and Advising, all those social links that we have. When we finalize the protocol, at the end of the document, we have put all addresses, including the toll-free number. And we have pamphlets that we have distributed to parents and the learners that in cases of stress, where the school does not report, honestly speaking, it's a matter of education. Parents and the SGBs and people around, they do have information. We can only heighten awareness programs. Thanks.
Thank you,
DPD. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, and thanks to the DG for responding to some of the issues. But I must also thank the Honourable Members and the Honourable Chair for also some of the recommendations. We have taken note of that. But I just need to also emphasize the fact that from the justice, crime prevention and security cluster, like I indicated on the 10th, that we have a four-pillar approach. And if I can just quickly just go through the approaches. The pillar one, it says community and stakeholder engagement. And that in itself is not limiting the JCPS cluster to any department. So we can involve any government department or any stakeholder, including civil society, in for us to ensure that there is safety and security. And then pillar two, which is dealing with legal and regulatory framework and intervention, which deals with issues of, you know, if there is any legal issues that are posing a challenge to us as the JCPS, we are able to identify them, and through involvement of other government departments, we make recommendations for certain amendments. And then pillar three, which is safety and security, is dealing more also with the issue of visibility. And I must also indicate, as it is it came out clear in some of the questions, like where the mere fact that we are saying one police officer or one police station to maybe responsible for about 30 or whatever schools. As a South African Police Service, we are a national government department. So, and over and above, I must indicate that over and above safety programs that we are implementing, we have also, for example, sector policing that is being implemented on a 24-hour basis. We have rural safety strategies that we are implementing. We also have community police forum initiatives that we are also implementing as the SAPS. And then, fortunate for us as African Police Service, we are one of the government departments that are running 24-hour service, 24/7. And we have 10111 call centers also, where people, if they have challenges, they can also report to. But through the JCPS cluster, we have the operational arm, which is called the NAT Joints, National Joint Intelligence Structure. Through that NAT Joints, we are able to establish priority committees. Hence, you have priority committee that is dealing with the issue of school matric exams and all those issues. So, as we, through our threat and risk assessments, we are able to establish priority committees to be able to mitigate any challenges that we face as the justice and crime prevention cluster. How we are monitoring programs, I will leave it to General Mamoteti to talk to that. And then the issue of the closing of illegal shippings, I think the DG has touched on it. To say illegal shippings for us is a no-no. But legal shippings, which is obviously as a result of them being approved by the liquor board, it's an issue that somewhere, I think, from our side, the South African Police Service will take it up. But I must also indicate that the South African Police Service, we have a firearm, liquor, and second-hand goods, which is focusing. Part of their mandate is to also ensure that they ensure compliance on the issues of liquor, the selling of liquor by the liquor outlets. The issue of visibility, whether do we have capacity? Yes, we do have capacity. Like I indicated, we've got the sector policing, we've got rural safety, we've got crime prevention units, we have 10111 call centers. We have also specialized units like your K-9 units that we normally use when we have school safety programs. We go to such schools, we use our K-9 capacity that they can be able to detect on the drugs that are in the schools. And then We also have other specialized environments like your flying squad. So those units that when you phone them, they are able to respond. Their role is just to react to, you know, crimes in progress, especially of serious in nature. So that is to support the school safety programs. The issue of satellite police stations. Satellite police stations are just, it's more about bringing services closer to, it's more like your contact point, bringing services closer to the community. And then normally the satellite police stations, they operate from a police station. So a police station can have about 2-3 contact points. It's more about, because in some cases you find some of the police stations are far from certain communities. So the issue of satellite police stations is more bringing closer service. But in most instances, satellite police don't have operational capacity. They are doing more administrative function, like certifying of documents and opening of dockets. But the issue of operational capacity, like I indicated, we have sector policing and other environments which are running, of course, 24/7. The issue of teachers accused of criminality and then incidents being reported, I must emphasize this issue that not being aware of any criminality and not reporting it is also a crime in itself. So people can be charged for actually being aware of crime and not reporting, especially moreover for children. So that is more serious. Yes. And then the issue of that was raised by honorable member, I think all this on the issue of Eastern Cape not doing well. General Mamutedi did speak to in his presentation to say already from national side we've already dispatched our team down to Eastern Cape to deal with the challenges there so that we can see the improvement. So we've already identified it and it's being addressed. The involvement of police reservists and CPFs, you know, the beauty of policing is that in this democratic government is that fortunately for us, you know, when we have community police forum, a community police forum, they are in all police stations, they are established in all police stations. And now the beauty of having them in those communities is that if there's any police, if there's any school there, they need to ensure that through community police forums we involve as well, you know, a rep from a school. So that it must be as inclusive as possible, our community police forums. So we'll also talk to that. Fortunately, General Mamutedi is her responsibility. She will also ensure that as we meet with community police forums, that we encourage them to ensure that they also get more involved in the schools, and including even in the rural safety strategy in the rural areas as well. Through our rural safety strategy, we'll also ensure that they focus as well to support schools, so that the schools can do what they do best, which is learning, teaching, and learning. I think that I've covered. If there's issues that I didn't cover, General Mamutedi, maybe if you have picked it up, please can you just maybe come in?
I think the DG and General Mutlala have actually covered all the aspects or all the questions, but also just from our side that we took note of the monitoring of the programs again, like the DG has indicated, which is going to be an integrated thing that we're going to be working with the Department of Education. Already we had a meeting with them. We have agreed on a monitoring tool that we're going to be developing to ensure that whatever the programs that are being implemented at a local level, we can be able to detect whether they are making a progress. But safe to say that the safety committees that are supposed to be effective, like we have been talking about the effectiveness of those committees, are the ones that are supposed to be sitting and evaluating the impact of those programs, because they are the ones that are coming up with those programs. Because if the program is working, then there's no need for you to continue the program. But if it's not working, then you can still expand it, because they are sitting there on the ground. They know and they understand the challenges more than us. So I think the effectiveness and the rollout in terms of a visit that you're going to be conducting from the provinces to the local level, it will actually assist in a good way to be able to make sure that the structures that are there, they are effective and they have all these other role players that the committee has actually proposed in terms of involving the COGSTA, in terms of involving like people from the CPFs, because in the CPFs we also have the youth structure, which is actually supposed to be playing a role in that regard. And I think the rest have been covered. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to everybody for the responses. Members, it does not end here. I saw an attempt from Honorable Uli. Let's allow it. I don't want to be arrested.
Nobody's going to be arrested. Two questions. The one to the department. When I first come to a new portfolio, I have to learn. It takes me a while. But eventually I find one or two of the black spots. And I think I found one of the black spots. And that is the vetting of educators by SAIS. DG, it's a big black spot. It's not working. And they admitted this week. And I'm raising it here because it's about learner safety. If there is a crime by a teacher, SAIS is not managing to blacklist the teacher before the teacher is resigning and being reemployed in a different province. So now you're dealing with a different education department who has got a different vetting process. It's a black spot, and we have to deal with it. And I know that it involves the Department of Justice, so I'm not putting all the blame on you as the DG, but I certainly am saying in South Africa this is a massive black spot. The sexual offences register by the Department of Justice is inadequate. Names are not being put on it. But also SAIS is being caught between two stools. They haven't got a system sophisticated enough to catch between I'm sexually assault a learner in Limpopo and then the school fires me or I resign, but next week I've got a job in the Eastern Cape teaching similar learners. There's a gap. And so we are not getting those people out of the system, you know? They must go and be accountants or bus drivers or something. They must not be with learners. And we've got to find a way to plug. It's a hole. It's a big hole. And until we plug that hole, learners are going to be assaulted by the same perpetrator but in a different province. And it's not working that. And then just a question to the police. Do you think it's appropriate during strikes that we have learners on site at schools with no adult supervision? It's my view that it's not, but the police may have a view. Thank you.
Honorable Nchaita.
Thank you very much, Old Chairperson. No, I forgot now to commend the good work that is done by the police in my area. You know, there's a school by the name of Samoguchi Junior School, which an enrollment of 2017, as it is 2017. And the teachers, rather the learners, they are very much unruly. But the police would come each and every day there and confiscate all dangerous weapons that are brought by these kids there, almost every day. If it was not the case, perhaps now some of the teachers would have been stabbed to death. So that is very good. And I take that now, that is being done. in all other areas. So I just wanted to comment. Good work. Thank you very much.
Can Honorable Chase just give us the name of the school again?
Zamukuhle. Junior Secondary School. Okay. This is Matatiela Malut.
Okay.
Yes. So that doing good work there. Yes. Matatiela, that is Matatiela.
Today he doesn't want to raise his voice. Honorable Pastor.
Chairperson, thank you. It's just a follow-up on SAPS. General Mhlaba, you mentioned something about community forums, the police forums. To whom are these people accountable? Because sometimes you will find that when taking an issue to them, they will say, we are not being paid, so it's not part of our duty to assist anytime or to come to me anytime. To whom are they reporting except by sitting meetings, the police and so on? There was a strategy or a program that was used by police to the unannounced randomly search at schools, because in these days learners are bringing weapons to schools, dangerous weapons. Is this program still being implemented? Is it accepted, or you have just abandoned it and so on? Only those two questions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable, thank you very much. Honorable Khosa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to maybe to assure maybe subs that really when we are with you here, it is not our aim to condemn, but to reflect. I believe you work at national. As I'm talking to you, I work on the ground. When I talk capacity, now when you have clarified me what you mean by police station and the satellite police station, it means in the area that I'm referring to, one police station equals more than 100 schools. So when I talk of capacity, I'm not saying you're not doing the work. You don't have sufficient resources to do the work. That is the capacity that I'm talking about. I'm not saying that you're sleeping. I indicated that the policeman or woman who is in a satellite is alone. Yes. He or she does the duty, because people come there to you said they photocopy, they certify, they report cases and all those, but that does not reduce the crime that is outside. That is what I mean by capacity. I'm not condemning, but trying to assist you. You are very far from where we are coming from. Thank you very much.
I give over to you.
Yeah. Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, on a lighter note, Honorable Khosa surprised me today. I don't know him as a man of follow-up questions. But maybe he was forced this time around.
He
did assure us, Chair, last time that he's got no follow-up questions. But he had to really do this follow-up. Chair, Honorable Ollies, I think I agree with you about vetting of teachers. But let me humbly request to correct you, not to say black spot, especially as a black person. Say a blind spot. I'm not even sure that I'm black. I might be brown. I'm just saying, I take that point. It's a big gap that we need to plug. Yeah. Coincidentally, in the public servants are appointed on a system called PERSAL. And in PERSAL, if you are dismissed from work, we can block you from coming back. Now, I'm surprised. Why can't we do the same even with this? But I'll go back and find out and work with SAIS, because it should be easy. If you are dismissed from the system, you can't come back. Even if I might want to employ you, you will not be paid your salary because you are not on the system. So we should do the same with these teachers as well, but I'll follow it up. Honorable Nchaise will follow up on this school. Coincidentally, Mr. Njobe says he attended in this school. Oh, he says he has visited. I thought you were saying he attended. Okay. So, as he said in the presentation, part of the instability in schools and violence that you see, it's also linked to the leadership of some of the schools, dysfunctionality of schools. I mean, if you have subs coming in now and again, it means that the structures have collapsed there. So we'll have to follow up this because it might be that we are only dealing with the symptoms and not the root cause of the problem. So I'll prioritize it and even discuss it with the SG on Monday. Chair, I think from our part, those are the questions, but thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG, and Ntate Mohlala and the team.
Thank you very
much. Oh.
They are still recording today.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The question whether from subs to subs, whether is it appropriate to have learners without, I think the DG has already dealt with that. But like it has been indicated in our presentations to say we are working as in an integrated manner. So if, for example, for certain reasons, there's going to be either a strike or whatever, if we are alerted, we have an early warning, as the SAPS will increase visibility around those schools to ensure that, you know, there is no crime. Even if we have to bring in, like I indicated, specialized capacity, your flying squad and canine capacity, which are not actually bound to a police station. They are working across, you know, provinces, even nationally we can deploy them. So we can do that, working obviously closely with our colleagues from the Department of Basic Education. The CPF, to whom are they accountable? CPF is community police. So without the police, there's no CPF. CPF is not the community. It's a community police forum. So now, I think it is not right for any CPF member to say they are not being paid or what, because that forum, it's there for us, for the community and the police to jointly identify challenges, and then for the police, if it is operational issues, for the police to respond, not for the community to respond, for the police and other law enforcement agencies to respond. So they can, if a matter is brought before a CPF, one of the CPF executive committee member, he can escalate it to the local police station, because they do have the necessary numbers. So I think it's just a matter of maybe somebody maybe not understanding their role, but we've taken note of that and we'll also highlight it as we meet with the CPS structures. The strategy to conduct unannounced school searches, it was indicated in the presentation of our sister department from the Department of Basic Education. You know, sometimes this type of operations, they must be coordinated. If they are not coordinated, I can just imagine if the police just have to just to come to a school and during that time, then the people are busy with the learners are busy with an exam. So I don't think from our side as the police would like to see that happening. Hence, this coordination of doing this operation is always done in a coordinated manner. It must always be done in a coordinated manner. Unless otherwise, if there's something else that is over and above, you know, the teachers or the institution of learning. But we will not encourage our police just to go to any school without this being coordinated. But we coordinate in such a way that the information is not being linked to the people that might have been committing that criminal activity. And then thank you very much, Mr. Khoza, Honorable Khoza, on the issue of capacity. Just to say, from our side, like I was indicating, that we've got other capacities, like specialized units. So it is not only the responsibility of the police. You've got the police station, but you also have specialized environments that are working across police stations. And through the 10111, we are able to monitor incidents and respond. Even if the police station doesn't have to invite us. I mean, if on our radio communication, members of the flying squad or K-9 or tactical response teams, they hear that there is an incident happening in a particular policing precinct, they will respond. They don't have to be invited. So I was just clarifying that to say, in terms of the capacity, we are able to ensure that we support satellite police stations, including police stations in general. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, colleagues, for the input. DG, when we were talking there, you highlighted that there's going to be a strike, and I want to take the advantage of the time that both of you are here. Maybe you can just give us a short update so that committee members, they don't see the strike on TV, and also SAPS, we hope that everything goes according to plan in terms of the peaceful strike. Maybe both of you, I know that it's an ambush, but this is a necessary one. DG.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'll be very careful next time of some of the things that I'm saying. No, indeed, we've received a notice of a possible industrial action from SATU on the 17th of this month, which is next week. In other words, the strike is planned for the 17th of October, and the issues involved date as far back as 2014, I think. And among others, the main issue, there are a list of things, but the main one is around 0.5, which your committee has been fully appraised on. So that's where we are at the moment. But the minister is still discussing with MECs. I think there's a meeting planned for tomorrow, a teleconference between the minister, deputy minister, and MECs to discuss the matter as part of finalizing the plan for next week, Tuesday, I think. 17th should be next week, Tuesday. Yeah.
You got your update. I'm sure you'll be playing your oversight. Yes. Colleagues, that brings us to the end of the meeting. Thank you very much for the presentation and the responses that you have given us. We hope that you are able to achieve your mission to make sure that our schools are safe and secured. We appreciate the, you know, the efforts that you are making to make sure that it becomes a reality. Because for us as a portfolio committee, it's our interest.